call our third case for today, 98-0596, Elections Board of Wisconsin versus Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce et al. First counsel is Cynthia R. Hirsch, Assistant Attorney General, representing the Elections Board of the State of Wisconsin.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I am Cynthia Hirsch, Assistant Attorney General, and I'm here today on behalf of the Elections Board of the State of Wisconsin.
Almost now that you've said that, I've muffed my line, so I'll have to go back and make a correction. Justice Wilcox will not be sitting. He has withdrawn from participation. I'm sorry. You're Cynthia Hirsch. For the third time.
I won't say it again. Almost nothing is more important to the people of this state than our ability to vote for our state and local representatives as informed citizens, armed with accurate and meaningful information about who we are voting for. This case is not about the censor of ideas. This case is not about the limiting of free speech. This case is about knowing who the speakers are and who is paying for the speech. The state has not asked to stop the campaign ads before you. The state simply wants WMC and the other defendant corporations to disclose the same information that is requested of every other campaign advocate. Your ruling in this case must ensure that all campaign advocates play by the same rules. If the ads before you are determined to be a mere discussion of the issues, instead of what they obviously are, express campaign advocacy, the effect will be to frustrate the exchange of ideas and availability of information, not to encourage it. In fact, such a ruling will leave Wisconsin's election laws meaningless. And those laws provide this state with a well-established system of fairly regulating campaigns so that citizens can participate as an informed electorate. If all it takes is a sophisticated approach to scripting ads so that the listener is explicitly told to vote for a particular candidate without actually using the word vote, why would any candidate or any group that wishes to support a candidate ever again go through the rigors of filing and disclosing expenses?
Well, if I may interrupt you, we have all, as a court, reviewed the ads. I have a question about the ads, if we could get into that in just a moment. I noticed, we noticed that at the end of each 30-second ad, there was a little disclaimer at the bottom of the ad that said, paid for by Wisconsin Manufacturers, or WMC Issue Mobilization Council, Inc. A couple of questions about that disclaimer. Number one, is it required? If in fact they prevail, will any kind of disclaimer be required?
I believe not.
Okay, number two, although this identified WMC because it said WMC Issue Mobilization, even if it was required, what would be to stop WMC from forming a corporation, labeling it Citizens for Better Government, and putting that at the tag end?
The statute, the state statute, requires them to disclose who the contributors to IMC are, or who the contributors to the corporation that you've just suggested are. So whether they say this ad is paid for by IMC or WMC or not is irrelevant either way. If the ads are express advocacy, and we submit they are.
No.
Suppose they're issue ads. Right. If they're issue ads, does a disclaimer have to appear?
I don't think so.
So if they prevail, no disclaimer even has to appear on the ad.
Right, that's exactly
and if
right.
They want, if they prevail and if they want to put a disclaimer on the ad, they could create a corporation, call it Citizens for Better Government, and put that on the ad.
Absolutely.
Okay.
If this court decides they are issue ads and therefore not regulated, then they don't have to put anything on those ads. Or, as you say, they could make up a corporation and put them on. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Oh, one other question. As the ads ran, what we saw in conference was a series of five ads, but it started with a WMC logo and ended at the end of 5 minutes with a WMC logo. I take it that these ads ran clean. In other words, the first thing a viewer saw was the referee raising his hands, saying you make the call. I'm trying to get the exact context in which they ran.
I have the same tape that you have that was submitted with
Maybe Mr. Williamson can answer.
But I believe that's accurate. But I think Mr. Williamson should comment on that. It's interesting to me that you use the term issue ads. I think it's very important to note in this case that nowhere in the U.S. Supreme Court opinions does the term issue ads appear. In fact, nowhere in the two Supreme Court opinions in which the U.S. Supreme Court has commented on this issue does the term issue ads appear or does the term bright line test appear. I think in order to really get to the core of this case, we have to look very carefully, even dissect, the Buckley opinion. The U.S. Supreme Court in Buckley, first of all, spends two-thirds of its decision discussing other aspects of campaign finance. When it gets to disclosure, it very clearly sets forth the compelling government interests in allowing disclosure. The U.S. Supreme Court states that disclosure... Just a minute. I'm sorry, I can't get to it.
We'll find it.
The U.S. Supreme Court clearly states that what is essential is to recognize... I'm sorry. That disclosure is justified for three reasons, and it is especially important when the free functioning of national institutions is involved. After going through the three compelling interests, the Buckley Court says that disclosure appears to be the least restrictive means of curbing the evils of campaign ignorance and corruption. What's essential for you to recognize, then, is that at that point, only to address a perceived vagueness problem, does the Buckley Court adopt the express advocacy standard and adopt a footnote from an earlier part of its decision. In fact, it puts a supra to that footnote. It almost is a footnote to a footnote in which it lists examples of express advocacy. Those examples are followed by the terms such as. It is the defendants that have decided or created a bright line test out of this footnote. Had the Buckley Court intended to make that group of words in that footnote the entire universe of words that could be expressed advocacy, it would have put those words in the text.
But
it would have explained the words.
Don't the defendants have an awful lot of support for that? I mean, every circuit except the Ninth, of which I'm aware, has essentially said they're correct.
I think that the lower court federal opinions are not precedent in this case. I think in each of those opinions, circuits are looking at the language of other ads, not these ads, and they're looking at other state statutes, not our state statute. I think the U.S. Supreme Court has spoken twice on what express advocacy is. And what's essential to recognize is that after it relegates this list of examples to a footnote, it goes back to the text. And in the text, it says, this reading is directed precisely to that spending that is unambiguously related to the campaign of a particular federal candidate. There is where the U.S. Supreme Court tells us precisely what the express advocacy standard is. It's not a list of possible examples in a footnote. It's spending that is unambiguously related to the campaign of a particular federal candidate.
That's Buckley?
That's Buckley.
And what's the other case? The Massachusetts case?
The other time the U.S. Supreme... Yeah, and by the way, that quote is at page 80 in Buckley. The other time that the Supreme Court has spoken about the express advocacy standard is the MCFL case, the Massachusetts case. The Supreme Court did not then take the opportunity to again take this footnote and say this is a bright line test. It could have done that, and it didn't. Instead, what the Supreme Court says in MCFL is that express advocacy is an explicit directive to vote for named candidates. And in finding the pamphlet in MCFL express advocacy, and again, it did find this pamphlet to be express advocacy. It specifically says, the facts that this message is marginally less direct than Vote for Smith does not change its essential nature. Both times the U.S. Supreme Court has had an opportunity to tell us what express advocacy is. It has not adopted a bright line test. It has not clung to the examples in footnote 52. It has told us that express advocacy is unambiguously related to the campaign of a particular federal candidate. It has also told us that a direct, explicit directive to vote for those candidates is express advocacy, and the fact that the message is marginally less direct than Vote for Smith does not change its essential nature.
Well, isn't that the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce position, that these ads are not unambiguous, that they're not unambiguously related to the campaign, that you have to make several inferences? Suppose they ran 90 days before the election. Would that be unambiguously related to the campaign of a particular candidate?
I think you're asking two questions. One is what their position is with respect to the language of the ad, and the other is whether the timing of the ad is relevant. They have consistently said there's a bright line, it couldn't be brighter. The only bright line test that's ever been proposed is footnote 52. Given the language of the U.S. Supreme Court, the state submits, you need to look at the language of the ads. There is nothing in the U.S. Supreme Court that says express advocacy is the opposite of implied advocacy, or express advocacy is the opposite of an issue ad. What we have to do is read these ads as a whole, look at their essential nature, look at their entire content, and decide whether they unambiguously relate to the campaign of a particular candidate. And I submit that every school child on the street, that every viewer of these ads can view these ads in a vacuum, whether or not they're right before an election, and tell you exactly what they relate to.
When did they run, factually?
I'm sorry?
When did they run, as from a factual standpoint?
They ran within 10 days of the election.
They started 10 days out and continued on?
Again, I will defer to Mr. Williamson on this. I think it's within 10 days to 2 weeks of the election.
There's something to be said about bright-line tests. If we're dealing with large number of volumes, people have to have notice of what's expected in order to proceed. Your proposal talks about, let's look at the essential nature of each individual ad and review it in the context. Well, you know, that's one of those things that after the fact you might know if you've made have a problem earlier on. What kind of definition or contour are you proposing that is akin to a bright line so people can have notice of what's expected and not expected rather than let's take a look at each one individually?
I understand your question, and much is to be said for a bright line test in that it's more convenient. It's simpler, it's easier to follow. I submit to you that there are other constitutional standards, such as obscenity and minimum context, that are not precisely defined, that we are often in constitutional law asking courts to interpret. We are asking courts to exercise judgment, and I think that's precisely why the U.S. Supreme Court put the examples in a footnote. I think that there is
it's
notice
important
in this
footnote.
Case.
Footnote, it's cited again on a cross-reference at 80, you referred us to.
I'm sorry, the original footnote is footnote 52.
Right.
And footnote 108 adopts
right,
52.
Exactly.
Now, I take it that, again, on a factual matter. Oh, yeah, sure.
Thank you. I think that there is notice in this case. I think when the Buckley Court says that this applies to spending that's unambiguously related to a campaign, they're giving us direction. And I think that the defendants, WMC, other corporations, can read Buckley. That is what the law is. There is not precise definition here, but there certainly is strong guidance. And it is up to the courts to look at ads in their as a whole, to look at what they're saying. We are not required to pull out one word and say, aha, this is the express word. These ads, and I also wanted to go on about the content of the ads in response to an earlier question. These ads do not discuss issues. An issue ad is an ad that is trying to convince the listener about an issue. These ads vilify candidates. When you listen to these ads, they are clearly about candidates. There is a picture of a candidate and a name of a candidate that predominates the entire ad. The ads are about what the candidate has done that the speaker doesn't like. And at the end, the ads call for action, just as the ads in the Firgash case called for action. There's an explicit directive. The ads ask the listener to make a call, and in fact, the ads ask the listener to tell the candidate what they don't like about them. In one of the ads, the Koala ad, the explicit direction to make a call is accompanied by a picture of an umpire. What could be clearer? They're asking the voters, the listeners, to make a judgment, to make a decision. Umpires don't make telephone calls, they make decisions.
Let me interrupt you for a minute and ask you, you mentioned the Firgash case a couple minutes ago. As I read Firgash, one of the significant factors was the fact that there really was no other action that could occur but in regard to a vote in the election. Now, that's really not true with these ads, is it? Because what the viewers are being asked is to make a call. They're not being told to vote one way or the other. They're not even being told to vote. Isn't that a big difference in Firgash?
I don't think so. I think what the Firgash court says, and I believe this is what you're referring to, is that the ads, when read as a whole, with limited reference to external events, are susceptible to no other reasonable interpretation. I believe these ads are absolutely susceptible to no other reasonable interpretation. When viewed by listeners, it is absolutely clear that these ads are telling people not to vote for Edelman, not to vote for Koala. Justice Abramson asked me earlier about context, about the timing of the ads. It is the Firgash case that states that we are allowed to make limited reference to external events. I submit that the content of these ads by themselves are express advocacy. It is not necessary for us to make limited reference to external events. But if we do so, and I don't think there's any authority that says we can't, I don't think there's any authority that prevents us from looking at context. In fact, on the contrary, there's a long line of U.S. Supreme Court cases that suggest what every school child knows. Whether you say fire in an empty theater or a crowded theater makes a significant difference. If we make a very limited reference to context in this case, and I submit time, place, and audience is the context, then it clearly affirms the clear answer that these are express advocacy ads. The ads were aired shortly before the election. They were aired in a geographical area in which each of the targeted candidates were running, and they were aired to an audience of voters who were about to vote for those candidates.
Serge, could I ask you a question? Your position is these ads are unambiguously express advocacy. Is that
correct?
Right? Am I not correct that the text or similar text to these ads was taken to the elections board for review before they ran?
You're asking me about the election eve letter, I believe?
I think he's probably asking you about the fact that the staff, as we understand it, had been asked to give advice and did give advice,
yes,
saying these ads were okay prior to the time they started running the ads. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And on the record at document 15, you will find an October 2nd letter by Kevin Kennedy, the executive director. Our position on this letter at the outset is this would mitigate forfeitures. It does not make the complaint voidable. This letter, it does not form a basis for dismissing the complaint. It may form a basis for mitigating forfeitures.
Well, it seems to me we're asked to decide a case in which the facts are that the people who you're proceeding against took the steps of going to some of the most expert practitioners in the field, asked their approval in advance, got the approval, and now you're coming against them. Now, I mean, extrapolating from that or generalizing from that, if you don't have a bright-line test, isn't this sort of thing going to happen all the time? And isn't it true that even after approval was given for these ads, people went into court to try to enjoin those ads from being run. So it seems to me, under the statute, 1166, any elector is authorized to second guess even the approval of ads by the elections board. Isn't that correct?
I don't believe that's correct, and I'd like to answer your question by speaking for a moment about this October 2nd letter. This was an election eve informal opinion. There's no evidence in this record.
Election eve, October 2nd?
Well, not election eve, but it was close to the election. My understanding is that the executive director was given very little time to give an informal answer. This was not a researched answer. It was not an answer in which... There's also no evidence in the record that he had the entire ads in front of him. His letter refers to radio scripts. There's no evidence that he was given all of the scripts. He certainly wasn't given a TV video. And he qualifies his letter, and I think it's important for you to read this letter. After he suggests that these ads may be express advocacy, he qualifies the letter by saying the timing of the broadcasts in the midst of a political campaign could raise the suggestion that these are essentially candidate advocacy ads, since they do identify an individual who is on the ballot for the fall election and urge listeners to take action related to the candidate's stand on particular issues. This is an equivocal letter. It's not an emphatic answer. In addition, he concludes the letter by stating that it is not a formal election board opinion. The more general answer, I think, to your question is that when corporations push the edge on laws, they take a risk. And in this state, as in 22 other states, we have laws prohibiting corporations from contributing to campaigns. What these ads are about is trying to circumvent those laws.
Ms. Hirsch, let me interrupt and ask you again. You're asking us to look at the context of each ad. And you talked about the time, place, and audience. Let me just ask, if these particular ads were run 3 months before the election, would they be okay?
I think, and I want to be very clear about this, that these ads are express advocacy in and of themselves. And no, they would not be okay. They are express ads regardless of when they are run.
Well, how do we utilize this time frame that you're giving us? What's the line that we draw? 3 months, 2 months, 1 month, 2 weeks before the election?
I don't think it's important to draw a line because I'm not suggesting to you that context is the test. In fact, statutes that rely only on timing have been thrown out. I'm not suggesting to you that the timing of the ads is what makes them express advocacy.
What's the test in your opinion?
The test that I'm suggesting is the Buckley test. The Buckley court sets forth express advocacy, and it explains express advocacy by saying it's precisely related to the spending that is unambiguously related to the campaign of a particular candidate.
Doesn't it also say expressly advocates a particular election result?
Right. And in discussing what express advocacy means, it says this reading is directed precisely to that spending that is unambiguously related to the campaign of a particular candidate. That's at page 80. I think in determining whether an ad is unambiguously related to a campaign, a court may make a limited consideration of time, place, and audience. I am not suggesting to you that context is a replacement for the Buckley standard. I'm not asking you to apply anything but the Buckley express advocacy standard.
But Ms. Hirsch, all of the factors that you mentioned strike me as factors that reasonable people could differ on. And we're talking about the First Amendment here, the free speech. The defendants here make, I think, a very good argument that a bright line is needed. I'm not necessarily agreeing with where they say the bright line should be, but shouldn't there be a bright line so that people cannot make a mistake? We may not be able to draw a line, courts may not be able to draw a bright line when it comes to obscenity cases. But certainly with respect to election cases where we have a definite date and we have definite people running and we have definite geographical areas, can't we draw a bright line taking into account those factors?
The U.S. Supreme Court failed to draw a bright line. I think, given the current climate of election advocacy, it would be difficult. The Supreme Court recognized compelling state interests, and generally those interests have to do with the prevention of corruption. But the world has changed in 23 years. Election campaigning, electioneering is more expensive, it's more sophisticated. We have very sophisticated professional writers scripting these ads. I'm not sure at any given time this court or the U.S. Supreme Court could draw a bright line given the universe of creativity out there. And what I'm submitting to this court is that in this state, we should not let creative writing circumvent what we know the law to be. And but our state laws prohibit
You see, she's making the argument, as the former justice of the Supreme Court did with obscenity, that I know it when I see it. That simply is unacceptable to me, anyway.
My time is done, but I'd like to respond to that. The other side has accused me of making that argument. I am not making that argument. You have much more guidance here than I know it when I see it, or if it walks like a duck, it is a duck. You have guidance from the U.S. Supreme Court in two cases. You have language that explains what express advocacy is, and this court can exercise judgment in applying that standard to these ads. It is constitutional to find these ads express advocacy.
Counsel, I have one question for you. If you were drafting this opinion, what would you say as the standard for either the Elections Board in additional regulations or for future courts in applying?
I would say the standard is what the Buckley Court stated, that it is spending that's unambiguously related to the campaign of a particular federal candidate. I would then go on to say that in making that determination, certain factors can be considered, and I would draw from the language of the MCFL case and the Fergatch decision.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Williamson, representing Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and others.
Thank you. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Brady Williamson with LaFollette and Sinekin, and with Ray Tafora, Michael Best, and Friedrich, we represent the four Wisconsin corporations who are defendants in this case. Let me begin a bit unconventionally and address Justice Babich's factual questions. The first question Justice Babich asked was whether the disclaimer which appears visually in each of the ads is mandated. And the answer is yes. It is mandated by federal law. Federal Communications Commission in section 73.1212 of its rules not only requires that every broadcast sponsor be disclosed, but also requires that for ads that advocate a position, that the officers, directors, and board of directors be identified in a piece of paper on file in each broadcast station, the political file that the FCC requires every broadcast station to maintain. Second question, the timing of the advertisements. We, of course, are bound by...
I had a second question.
Yes, sir.
And that is whether or not WMC could form a corporation, call it Citizens for Better Government, run money through that organization, legally figure out a way, and then use that as the disclaimer, paid for by Citizens for Better Government.
Yes, but the same federal communications regulation would require a disclosure at each broadcast station of the officers, directors.
Would it require who paid for the ads?
Yes.
I mean, who gave money to the Citizens for Better Government to pay for the ads?
No.
Isn't that the crux of this case, Mr. Williamson?
No, it's not the crux of this case, Your Honor.
Okay.
Because disclosure is only one of the issues that we're addressing. Let me answer your other factual question, which was the timing of the advertisements. The allegations of the complaint, which of course we accept on a motion to dismiss, suggest that the advertisements ran between sometime after October 21st up to the weekend immediately before the election. I think it's also important to note that the defendants have in the past run political commentary outside of an election cycle, dealing with issues, property taxes, highway funds, issues that address this people of this state. This case is about first principles. not only first principles of law, but first principles of government. The state of Wisconsin wants to prosecute these defendants for expressing their political point of view without first submitting to state regulation. The state cannot do that, the trial court held, because it would be, quote, profoundly unfair, close quote, to apply a new, unarticulated standard retrospectively to the four corporations the state has selectively sued. The trial judge dismissed this case with prejudice. You should affirm that decision. Not only was it legally correct, it was constitutionally compelled.
Should we affirm the trial court on the rationale set forth by the trial court?
You can, but I would suggest, Justice Bradley, that if this court did that, we would be faced relatively soon with yet another cycle of ads broadcast to express political points of view, and the response that Justice Prosser identified, individuals or candidates running to court asking for prior restraint. And I don't think that's healthy for the system. I think it puts the judiciary of this state in a completely untenable position and compromises its integrity and independence. And that's precisely why, as Justice Bablich and Justice Crooks observed, there has to be a bright line. We can disagree about the bright line, but there has to be a bright line because individuals and, yes, corporations like the Sierra Club, like the NRA, like pro-life, pro-choice organizations, and like the defendants here, have to be able to determine in advance whether or not their speech is going to be subject to criminal and civil sanctions. Now, we have a bright line. The Supreme Court of the United States has told us twice what that bright line is. And at least a dozen federal courts have told us not only that it is a bright line, but that express means express, and it is the antithesis of implied.
Well, let's see.
I can only speak for myself. I agree with you completely when it comes to these defendants. They didn't know what the bright line was. They didn't know where it is. So I want to get past that because I think the issue here is whether or not this is express advocacy, but what this fight is really all about, I think you and I both know it, is whether or not the source of funding for these ads has to be disclosed to the public. Would you agree?
That's certainly one of the key issues.
Okay, and that's the only issue that I'm not concerned about these defendants in the past. In the future, yes, but not in the past.
Justice Bablich, let me address that four square because the Supreme Court did in Buckley versus Vallejo. On page 80, as the state has reminded the court, there is an extended discussion of the importance of disclosure. Of course it's important, but there has to be express advocacy.
I understand, and we're going to get into that, but I want to clear away all the clouds that have... So we now agree that the issue is who's going... The real issue that we're fighting about, the fighting issue is, do you have to disclose who's paid for them? And the second thing that I want to see if we can clear up is whether or not there is any question here at all that the purpose of these ads was to get the voting public to vote either for or against these candidates.
The complaint makes that allegation, Justice Bablich.
And you agree with it.
And for purposes of this proceeding, I will stipulate to that, that a purpose of this broadcast commentary was to influence the election. But that's precisely the kind of speech that the Supreme Court said in Buckley versus Vallejo and MCFL is entitled to the fullest protection of the First Amendment because candidates, people who want to participate in the governance of this state and the discussion of issues important to the people of this state are inextricably intertwined. You look at Buckley, you look at MCFL, it doesn't just talk about issues, it talks about candidates and issues. Now, Justice Bablich, on the subject of disclosure, the defendants have no difficulty with disclosure. Of course, those weren't the rules in effect at the time they ran the ad, and the state statute, Chapter 11, does not permit corporations, literally does not permit corporations to register with the Elections Board and to report. For if they did that, they would be in violation of 11.38. which is the prohibition on campaign contributions by corporations to candidates, which has been the law of this state since 1905.
But if you prevailed, Mr. Williamson, and I get off the court, is there anything to stop me from setting up a corporation called Citizens for Better Government, and then to get money from the Sierra Club, or labor, or from realtors, or from WM, or Big Tobacco, and run these so-called issue advocacy ads, that the same type of ads that you've run here, without disclosing where I've got my money from?
As the law now stands, you're absolutely correct. Let me make a suggestion.
Don't you think that makes a difference in public debate?
It might be, but the question, Your Honor, then becomes who should provide for disclosure. Arkansas, Arizona, Missouri, Maine, Virginia, Vermont, all in the last 2 years have established comprehensive campaign finance laws, rewritten their laws. And some of them, Vermont being a good example, have tried to grapple with this problem. And that's perfectly appropriate because the legislature is the body that regulates ultimately campaigns in this state and in this country. And if the legislature finds, to hearken back to Buckley, corruption or the threat of corruption, then the legislature can try to craft a constitutional provision that would provide disclosure for this kind of political commentary. This legislature, the Wisconsin legislature, has not done that, and it's certainly not appropriate for this court, either in hindsight or prospectively, to develop legislative rules. I mean, that's for the legislature, not for the judicial branch.
Is it your position that these ads are advocacy of candidate ads, but not express advocacy?
These ads, Your Honor, discuss individuals who happen to be candidates. These ads express a point of view about these candidates. The candidates didn't like what was said about them.
Okay. Let me repeat my question. Is it your position that these ads are advocacy of candidate ads, but not express advocacy?
These ads advocate a position. They suggest that the listener or viewer take action, but they refer in no way, to a candidacy, a campaign, a party, or anything dealing with the electoral process. And that's a critical distinction between these ads and the ad at issue, Justice Crooks, in the Furbanch case.
But you did concede that the intent of the ads, the intent of the sponsor, was to get people to vote one way or the other.
No. The intent of the ads was to influence people's views of public officials.
And who
happen to be candidates. Absolutely.
I mean, I watched television this weekend, I hate to admit, a couple ball games, and I saw some sloppy guy in his underwear dancing with a dog, and a couple of frogs talking about Louis. Not once did those ads say drink Bud or buy Light. But clearly the intent of those ads was to get people to buy Bud or drink Light. You agree?
Absolutely.
And isn't that what we're dealing with here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Williamson, how would you set up the bright line rule? You've talked about the need for a bright line rule. Would you just use the magic words from footnote 52 of Buckley, or what would you do to craft a bright line rule?
Your Honor, I think footnote 52 is illustrative. Those are examples. They don't define the universe. But we have two words, express and advocacy. The black letter dictionary, Black's dictionary of express, I think provides the bright line. Express means explicit, stated in words. That's what Buckley said as well. It does not mean implicit. And that's why, Justice Bradley, a voyage into the question of context is not only a swamp for the judiciary, it's a voyage without end.
Let's take your bright line test, because apparently that's something that is disturbing to myself and other judges or justices, that is the need for some definition, some notice. The bright line test advocated by some is referenced in footnote 52 in Buckley, and you say it's illustrative because it uses the term such as. And then you say it's got to be expressed. Well, let's say, fire, Mr. Candidate. Is that expressed?
Yes.
Send him packing.
Yes.
Is that expressed? Send him home. Is
yes.
that expressed? Give him a vacation. Is that expressed?
Yes.
Now, don't you think that the give him a vacation is subject to interpretation?
Oh, it might be.
What's so express about give him a vacation?
Because it would have been preceded, obviously, by a discussion of issues, of positions that have been taken.
So give him a vacation, in your opinion, would be an example of express advocacy of a candidate.
I offer that, the answer is yes. And I offer that, Your Honor, simply to show that footnote 52 is not a straitjacket.
Mm-hmm.
It does not invite the violation of common sense.
What
but
about,
it does require expression.
What's the difference between give him a vacation and he is a person, or he is a public official who is not to be trusted, who's against education and against health and against the common person? Now, that, if that's what the ad says, it doesn't say give him a vacation. Awfully close.
Let's ignore, Your Honor, let's ignore for the moment the decisions of the U.S. Court of Appeals from the First, Second, and Fourth Circuits. Let's just put them aside and look at Firgetch. Firgetch, I think, was wrong. I think Firgetch was decided a month before MCFL, but didn't even refer to the Supreme Court's decision in MCFL. But just for purposes of discussion, let's take Firgetch. The advertisement in Firgetch made negative references to President Carter, but it made negative references to President Carter's conduct of his campaign. The word campaign appears in it. In Firgetch, the advertisement concluded by saying, "Don't let him do it." Those were the exact words, "Don't let him do it." And the reference was to 4 more years. Gee, that's a term of office. And Justice Bradley, getting back to your question, precisely to your question, a comment that said Representative Jones is a bad legislator or a bad person or voted the wrong way, that's the debate that's at the heart of the First Amendment. That's core political speech. Look.
So you make the issue, the when you say issue advocacy, although that says, you know, taxes and education and all those things are mentioned but not discussed in each one of those 5 ads, the real issue is the continuing viability of the public service of that particular individual. Is that what the issue is?
Not the viability.
Or the continuing service. Is that the issue? Is that
citizens of this issue? Citizens of this state, including corporations, have not only have a right but an obligation to be critical when they see something to criticize of public officials.
So that's, but see, I kind of thought that maybe you were saying because they have taxes and schools and prison cells or something mentioned in these ads, that those are the issues. But it seems to me you're not saying that. You're saying the issue is whether or not this person should continue in service, and that's the issue.
No, it's not whether or not the individual should continue to be a state senator, state representative, or a judge. The issue is, how has this person conducted herself or himself in public office? And every citizen, corporate or individual, has the right to comment on that. And the desperate need for a bright line is so that citizens, individual or corporate, will not feel restrained, will not feel subject to the cloud of
why would they feel restrained if they simply have to report that they paid for it? Why would the real estate association or the teachers feel restrained simply because they have to report that they paid for these ads?
Your Honor, the Supreme Court in Buckley versus Vallejo discussed that specifically.
That was a case 22 years ago when only something like $300,000 of independent expenditures were involved. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars today.
Perhaps, Your Honor, the world has changed. Perhaps a case can be made that there is a need for disclosure, but that case has not yet been made.
Well,
but
maybe we can make it here. Let me give you, and obviously my concern is with the anonymity of the people who pay for the ads. Give you another ad that I watched Sunday. Ford Taurus, you know, with a wholesome family, making sure that the kid was protected, and then they go out in the car and all that. Now, let's say a week later, an ad runs that says, a Ford Taurus is a dangerous vehicle. It doesn't corner well, it's unsafe at high speeds, it's unsafe at any speed. Don't you think it makes a big, big difference if we're talking about the robustness of political debate? Let's put that into a political arena. The robustness of political debate for the people to know who paid for that second ad. Because if Chrysler paid for that ad, it's one thing. If the Consumer Reports magazine paid for that ad, it's another thing. Now, you have said that your position helps the robustness of political debate. My suggestion to you is that it hampers it because it allows anonymity of who is really paying it. Could you address that, please?
Yes. The United States Supreme Court, as recently as 2 years ago in the McIntyre case, made it absolutely clear that anonymous political speech has a long and hallowed tradition in this country going back to the Federalist Papers. Secondly, the Supreme Court in Buckley made it very, very clear that any attempt at regulation, even disclosure, which makes sense from a public policy standpoint, has to pass strict scrutiny. It has to be involving express advocacy. Why? The reason for that, Justice Babbage, is that any attempt by government to say who can speak, when they can speak, and how they can speak is antithetical to the first principle.
Why is that the issue? Why is government trying to... Government's not trying to stop you from speaking. Government is trying to get you to disclose who is speaking.
And it may well be possible to craft legislation that constitutionally provides for disclosure in these circumstances. We don't have that law in this state today. We don't have it in the United States code. Now, Senator Feingold and Senator McCain have a bill pending that would do that at the federal level. The Kettle Commission, which filed its report last year, has suggested that in this state. I have grave doubt about its constitutionality. Let me give you another reference as well, Justice Babbage. The Supreme Court in NAACP versus Alabama, 1958 decision, just as the civil rights movement was getting underway, expressed great concern about the compelled disclosure of people who associate to express a political point of view. There, of course, the concern was retaliation. So the question of disclosure is not open and shut. I will give you that as a political scientist or a professor of political science, I could make a wonderful argument for disclosure. Perhaps the legislature can, but it hasn't, and it's not for this court to legislate on a clean slate.
What about the elections board and using its rules and regulations?
Almost precisely a year ago, Judge Sarah O'Brien invited the election board, in her opinion, to do that. The election board, you'll recall, in 1976, in section 1.282C of its regulations, made it clear that the standard is express advocacy. The elections board is well aware of the standard. And if the elections board felt so moved, it could promulgate a regulation in this area. But until the legislature changes 11.38 to accommodate issue advocacy, I think any attempt by regulation would fall constitutionally.
You refer to the long and hallowed tradition of anonymous advocacy dating back to the Federalist Papers, and of course we all know that Wisconsin has a long and hallowed tradition of open government. Clean and open process. It appears to me that this case has little to do about your client's ability to run the ad, or Sierra 12's ability to run the ad, or Planned Parenthood's ability to run an ad, and everything to do about disclosing who's behind it. In the balance of Wisconsin's hallowed tradition, of clean and open process. Why isn't that a small price to pay? We're not talking about whether or not these organizations have the ability to run the ad. They can speak all they want. But to maintain our tradition, why can't we know who's behind it?
The answer, Justice Bradley, is that perhaps we can. But that's not the law today. And it's not for this court to make that law if it can be made constitutionally. Let me add a point.
This goes to question.
Pardon me?
Forget said we could. If you read Forget that way. Forget did not adopt your principle. Another court. The point I'm making is another court felt they had the power to do it, to interpret express advocacy.
Right, but the question in Fergatz was whether an ad that made a specific reference to a campaign fell under express advocacy. The court said it did. But I really don't think that it's satisfying to simply say, well, this is only about disclosure. And here's the reason. Justice Prosser touched on it. Disclosure, submitting to regulation, oh, just file a report, sounds innocuous. But based on that thread, that idea, groups and individuals, including people standing for public office, ran to court all over this state, 5 counties, and said, give us an injunction, stop this, take these ads off the air. And they did it 3 months ago. And this time the Dane County Circuit Court said, no, that's a prior restraint. Now, but for the argument for disclosure, but for the argument, oh, just go ahead and register, they wouldn't have been able to get into the courthouse door. And the notion of government regulation is not just censorship. It is any action by government, judicial, executive, or legislative, that inhibits people from speaking their mind about public issues and public officials, including candidates for office. Now, what's so interesting, I think, about this case, and the state touched on it in its oral argument, is what we've come to call the duck argument. It looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, must be a duck. Well, that's an interesting simile, but let's take it a step further in the context of the facts of this case. The defendants took that duck over to the election board staff. And the election board staff said, that's not a duck. Okay, so they ran the ads. And then the election board had a series of meetings, and its staff, in their legal opinions, which the court will find in our appendix, said, it's still not a duck. And you know what? Some members of the election board said, it is a duck. Some members said, it wasn't a duck. So how are the defendants, citizens of the state, to know? Because we're not dealing with a duck. We're dealing about the most fundamental right that citizens have in this state.
Mr. Wold, you have already prevailed with me on that argument. I think that these defendants had every right to not know, had no way to know. So I have no problems with that. But I'm looking at the future. Because what we write applies more than to just these defendants, as you well know. It applies to all future. And as I understand your case, if you win, if you prevail, then anybody will be able to go after a candidate for public office, whether that candidate's running for a partisan office or a nonpartisan office, and in ads like these, and as long as the ads don't use the kind of words that Justice Bradley used and you used, the public will not know who paid for these ads. Is that correct?
Yes, except for your last sentence. I think the public does know and can know who pays for these ads for this reason.
No. Who is the true source of the funding of the ads? I'm not talking about Citizens for Better Government paying for them. I'm talking about whether it was Planned Parenthood that gave me the money, or Right to Life that gave me the money, or teachers, or WMC. I mean, as I see it, Mr. Williamson, if you prevail, all special interests in this state will run to this haven. Am I right that the public will not know who is paying for these ads? Truly paying for these ads.
In the sense of individual financial support, you are correct. But the incremental benefit of that, Justice Babbage, let's step outside of the law and talk about public policy for a minute. The incremental benefit of that is far outweighed by the impact of government regulation. Let me give you an example. The first piece of issue advocacy in this state was done not by the defendants, but by the Sierra Club, expressing a point of view in a special election for the state Senate. No one had any doubt in the world, A, that the Sierra Club paid for it, and what interests, good interests, noble interests, the Sierra Club represented. The ads at issue in this case were sponsored by a business organization. Not a doubt in the world what that interest was. Now, would it help to know that the XYZ Corporation gave $100 and the ABC Corporation gave $500? Perhaps it would.
But Mr. Williamson, I'm talking about the sophistication to come. I mean, if I'm not holding my office and I set up a Citizens for Better Government, if I want to go after, let's say, a justice on this court, because that justice has expressed a pro-choice position, my ad does not, against that justice, does not have to reflect a pro-life thing. I could say that justice wrote an opinion that cost the taxpayers $150 million. And no one would know that it was really pro-choice or pro-life paying for that ad.
Yes. Yes.
That is what we could be looking at.
Yes. I think you're already looking at it, Justice Babbage, in a national level, because as we provided in the appendix in our supplemental brief, in the last 2 years, no fewer than 80 groups across this country of every ideological stripe have engaged in issue advocacy. This is not a bad thing. This is a good thing, because it's really at the essence of our democratic system of government. We are dealing with free speech. You must, not just the court, but the legislature, must do it with precision. And it is not enough to say, it walks like a duck, it talks like a duck, and it looks like a duck. This court should affirm the trial court.
Thank you.
In answering a question early on, Mr. Williamson, I think you indicated that there was a federal rule that required a disclaimer on the electronic media. Is there any... That wouldn't apply to print media, would it?
No, it would not.
If we were in the legislature, could the legislature require for issue advocacy some notice of disclosure, at least of the organization that's paying for it? Not deeper than that, but the organization that's paying for it, in your opinion?
Yes, if it was a carefully crafted provision that acknowledged the express advocacy standard of Buckley and the compelling state interest that the Supreme Court has required to permit any regulation. Yes, it is possible. Vermont tried, failed. The FEC has tried, failed. McCain-Feingold may provide a solution, but we won't know that until it's passed.
But even that would be subject to Supreme Court review.
Absolutely. Because again, of course, the issues are not just speech. They're also association and privacy.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williamson. Ms. Hirsch?
Thank you. I disagree with Mr. Williamson. It is the law today. The Buckley standard prevails. The Buckley standard is express advocacy. We are not asking you to change that standard. We are not asking you to misapply that standard. We are asking you to apply the standard of express advocacy. If the U.S. Supreme Court had intended express advocacy to incorporate a bright line, it would have put a bright line test in its opinion. If it had second thoughts about it, it would have included it in the MCFL opinion. In other U.S. Supreme Court opinions in which this U.S. Supreme Court intends to create a bright line, it does so, such as recent Fourth Amendment cases. It did not do that here. I sympathize with you. A bright line would be easy. It would be convenient. It would be clearer. But what we have is the express advocacy standard, and you can apply it given what you know about today's world, about today's slick, expensive advertising, and given what you know about the compelling interests in this state and about the need to prevent corruption.
Counsel, could I ask you a question? When you were speaking earlier, you indicated that the Elections Board staff was not given adequate time to reflect on the drafts that were presented to it. How much time would you say that the Elections Board needed?
You know, these are difficult questions because the facts surrounding that letter are not in the record. What I recall is that Mr. Williamson's clients called the Elections Board and asked them to deliver a quick and formal opinion. I don't know the answer to your question. I don't know how much time would have been needed. But I think the point here is that you're the court. You're the ones that need to look at the Supreme Court opinions, realize Buckley didn't intend a bright line test, and apply the express advocacy standard. The only confusion in this case, and there may be, have been confusion on the part of the Election Board staff, is whether there's a bright line. And once you look at the U.S. Supreme Court cases, and it's clear there is no bright line, then this court has to exercise judgment. It has to use the language in Buckley and the language in MCFL and apply the express advocacy standard. And I don't think that the election staff had the resources to do that when asked to give a quick and formal opinion.
Could I ask this question? This is kind of off the point, but in discussing express advocacy, does whether the advocacy is truthful or not have anything to do with it?
I don't believe it does. And I would remind...
You don't really care, then, whether the advocacy is true or not.
I think truth is a difficult thing to pin
you,
down.
You work for the Attorney General?
I do.
Has the Attorney General offered any legislation or any remedy for ads that are not true, whether they're disclosed?
I'm not aware of any.